And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I have had the pleasure on several occasions of speaking with best-selling author J. Randy Tarabarelli. On several occasions, talking about interesting books he has written about the Kennedy family or those adjacent to the Kennedy family. We also talked about his wonderful book, Grace and Steel, which takes a look at the women of the so-called Bush dynasty. And our very first conversation was about his book, Elizabeth, about Elizabeth Taylor. His latest book is a blockbuster. It is an extraordinary account of an extraordinary woman's life. The book is Jackie, Public, Private, Secret, published by St. Martin's Press. And surely of all the undertakings that J. Randy Tarabarelli has confronted over his long career as a best-selling author, this had to be one of the steepest challenges. And I, for one, think he has done an incredibly fine job of capturing the mystique of Jackie Kennedy. And I'm very, very honored to be able to speak with J. Randy Tarabarelli about this latest book and what it meant for him to try to put down on paper this incredible woman. J. Randy Tarabarelli, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you for having me, man. We go way back. I mean, wow, Elizabeth was a long time ago. So thank you for years and years of support, man. And reading my books, I really appreciate that. And you're right, this is, you know, my favorite of all of them.
I should think.
So I'm happy to be here to talk to you about it.
The very first line of the introduction is so intriguing. Somebody said to you, what's the point of biography if it doesn't reveal secrets? Tell our listeners who said that to you and under what circumstances.
That was said to me by Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, which is such an ironic statement coming from a woman who so closely guarded her privacy, right? I was a young writer working on my first book. This is back in the 1980s. And my first book was about Diana Ross. And I was under contract at Doubleday and Company in New York. And Jackie was an editor at Doubleday at that time. She had championed my book. And I had the opportunity to have conversations with her about, you know, wide range of subjects of celebrities, you know, privacy, biography. And as an editor, as a book editor, she realized that the only way a person like me could do a great biography was to sort of invade a person's privacy, you know? I mean, that's kind of what I do for a living, is I invade the privacy of celebrated people to really find out what it is that makes them tick. And what they have in common with us, like what is the shared humanity? And I think that you'll find in the new book, in my new book about Jackie, so many qualities that people can identify with. You know, you think a person like Jacqueline Onassis would be somebody that nobody could really relate to because of her wealth or her prestige or her status. Not true. You know, she lived a life of many challenges that I think we have in common, you know, with her. And I think that that's what this book is about. It's about sort of demystifying this iconic woman.
Mm. I think it would be great for you to take a moment to explain the subtitle of the book, Jackie, Public, Private, Secret. This stems from something she said to one of the many people you interviewed about her.
You're right. You know, one of my great sources was John Carl Warnicke, who we call Jack. And he was the man who designed JFK's memorial at Arlington National Cemetery. And Jackie had a romantic relationship with Jack Warnicke after JFK was assassinated and before she married Aristotle Onassis. And in fact, she left Jack Warnicke for Aristotle Onassis. But they remained great friends. And around the time of her 60th birthday, Jack wanted to ask Jackie, according to what he remembered in my interview with him, he asked her, you know, what did you see in Onassis? I mean, like, I just can't imagine the two of you together. And she said to him, oh, Jack, you know me, I have three lives, public, private, and secret. And he told me he certainly understood the public life. I mean, we all do. And he had some insight into the private life because they were, you know, a couple for so long. They almost married. But that secret life, man, that's the secret. You know, that's the good stuff, right? That's as a historian and a biographer, that's what I really wanted to get into. You know, and I found it to be so fascinating, you know, that she had had a secret life from the public that they really didn't know about. I mean, we really didn't even understand that Jackie had a family, the Auchincloss's, that was really her family, her side of the family, her mom's husband, and Jackie's, you know, half-brother, Jamie, and her half-sister, Janet, and her stepfather, Hugh, to whom she was so close that he gave her away at both her weddings. I mean, that's what I wanted to write about in this book. The Kennedys loomed so large in Jackie's history that we never really paid attention to the fact that she had her own family, and they weren't Kennedys, you know? And so that's what this book is kind of about. This book is really about that side of her life.
Mm. You say at one point in the book that in terms of concerted effort, this book was approximately 3 years in the making. But, of course, in terms of really, it's a matter of decades that this book is not just these 3 years you sat down to actually construct the book, but it is also drawing upon decades of research that you have done into the family. Can you just kind of help us understand that sort of enormous well from which you have drawn all that you share in this book, and the scope of the challenge in trying to kind of make sense of it and figuring out a way to present it in a cohesive and meaningful frame?
Well, first of all, thank you for reading the book. you know, because I could tell from these questions you're asking me that you actually read the book, and that doesn't always happen in interviews. So I want to just, you know, acknowledge that work that you put into doing that. And you're right. You know, I have written four previous books about the Kennedys. I'm kind of known as a Kennedy historian. I've been researching the Kennedys for almost 30 years, and every one of my books has been sort of focused on a particular subject. You know, my first book about the Kennedys was called Jackie, Ethel and Joan, Women of Camelot, and it was about Jackie's relationship with her sisters-in-law, Ethel Kennedy and Joan Kennedy. And I did The Kennedy Heirs, which was about the third generation of Kennedys. So that would be Jackie's relationship with her children. And I did After Camelot, which was Jackie's relationship with Onassis. And I did Jackie, Janet, and Lee, which is Jackie's relationship with her mom and her sister. You know, so I've been down this road. But with this book, I wanted to draw from all that research, 25 years worth of research on those other books, and find a story that I wasn't able to tell in those books because those books weren't about this, right? Hmm. This is Jackie and only Jackie, cradle to grave. Hmm. And I was able to, you know, access my interviews with Secret Service agents who are no longer here, with family members who are no longer alive. You know, I was able to go back and listen to my own voicemail messages from Jackie to be inspired, you know, from when I knew her. And I just drew from so much. And then plus we did new interviews with new people, of course, you know, for this book, people who I'd never talked to before. Hmm. And the combination of all that research, you know, 25 years worth of research, as well as new research, went into this book, you know, to try to find a narrative that would be interesting to people. I kind of approached this book as, what would I like to read if I was, you know, a person who just wanted to pick up a Jackie book? What would interest me? And I knew it wasn't a litany of her appearances at galas and different, you know, museum openings and, you know what I mean? I mean, I wanted to do something that actually had value.
Right. I think a lot of books about somebody like her, such a public figure, would be little more than an itinerary of, or kind of a journal of, and then the next day she did this, then the next day she did this, and your book is so much more than that. On the other hand, one of the most intriguing choices you've made is to not write, in a sense, a smooth flowing chronological chronicle of her life, and although the big sections of the book kind of fall into the kind of the large chapters of her life, we are, in a sense, kind of hopping back and forth from different points in her life. And I don't mean to convey to the listeners that in any way the book is chaotic. I mean, I love the way this book is put together, but I'm very curious as to why you made the choice that you did in terms of how this information flows.
Oh, again, thank you for asking me. I mean, that's a great question. No one ever asked that question. And I really appreciate that because, you know, it's by design, obviously. I don't want the reader to have to, you know, sort of slog through a chronological, you know, point-by-point Wikipedia-like book, you know, that she was born, and then she went to school, and then she did this, and then she did that. I mean, you know, I want my books to be entertaining as well as informative, and I want people to be, you know, I started the book, you know, in a way that I felt people would be compelled to begin reading. Actually, the book begins in like the last week of Jackie's life when she and John Warnicke are destroying letters that Jackie had received throughout her lifetime and throwing them into a fireplace so that after she's gone, you know, she's able to protect her loved ones from having their memories exposed to the public. And she and John Warnicke had this sort of ritual where they destroyed a lot of these mementos. And that's why I started the book. So I basically started the book at the end of the story.
Right.
So I want to be entertaining, but I also want to challenge the reader, you know, to sort of keep up, you know, pay attention, right? I mean, when you do a chronological point by point, sometimes the reader will go right to, oh, you know what, let me just skip all this and let me just get to 1960 when JFK is president, right? So they'll just jump all the way to chapter 10, you know, because they figure, well, I'm not going to be that interested in, you know, in her childhood, or maybe I don't care about how she met JFK. Maybe I just want to get to the part where she's first lady, and I don't let them do that because they're not going to be able to find it easily, right? So they have to actually sit there and read the book, and then I also, man, what I also do is I format my book into small chapters, and you'll notice that my chapters are usually no longer than 3 or 4 pages,
and some of them are less than 1 page. Some of them are less than a page.
Yes, and the reason for that is because I want people to finish the book. And sometimes when you're reading a book and you realize that you've got like 50 more pages to go before you get to the end of the chapter, you think to yourself, oh, man, you know what, let me just go to bed and I'll finish tomorrow. But if you see you've only got 3 more pages left, what do? You read those 3 pages, and then you look at the next chapter, and it's only 2 more pages, and you read those 2, and then you see the next one, it's 5, and you read those 5. Next thing you know, you're done with the book, right? So I have these little psychological ways of kind of, you know, getting people to become invested in the stories that I tell.
It really works. And I think it's very true to the way that Jackie Kennedy Onassis looked at her own life. You quote her at one point. I think this is an interview she did many, many, many years ago. When she said, every moment one lives is different from the other. The good, the bad, the hardship, the joy, the tragedy, love, and happiness are all interwoven into one single indescribable whole called life. And I really feel like we experience that in your book. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with J. Randy Tarabarelli about one of the most discussed books before the public now. It's called Jackie, Public-Private Secret. And it probably says something about its subject that All you need to hear is the name Jackie, and you know that we are talking about Jackie Kennedy Onassis. One of the things you say in the book is, when I started the book, I had to wonder if there was more to report, given all of the previous books. In the end, I found that the biggest surprises had to do with placing well-known stories into their proper context. I was going to ask you to give us an example, but instead I'm going to tell you the one I want you to talk about because I find it so intriguing. And this is something that, I knew a lot about already, but I didn't know it in the way that you tell it. And that is the story of when the Kennedys moved into the White House and the work which Jackie Kennedy then undertook almost immediately to try to restore the White House in terms of its decoration and furnishings. And again, I think a whole lot of people know quite a lot about that, including the memorable national telecast in which she, in a sense, gave Americans a tour of the newly restored and refurbished White House. But you place this in an emotional context that is really quite fascinating. Tell our listeners kind of the emotional frame of this moment in Jackie Kennedy's life and what it ultimately meant to her.
Well, it's interesting that when, you know, when Jackie first saw the White House, she was given a private tour of the White House by Mamie Eisenhower. She just thought that the place was terrible. You know, she just thought that the furnishings were awful, and she didn't want to live there. You know, she told her family, you know, I am not going to raise my children in this awful house. And there was some discussion between her and her mom and her stepfather about possibly living with them during some parts of the week and then going into the White House and putting in her time there and going back and forth. And she asked JFK if that was possible, and he said, no, you know, the First Lady needs to live in the White House. And it was Janet, Jackie's mom, who had the idea, well, look, if you don't like the way this place looks, then do something about it. You know, like, you have the opportunity to restore the White House back to its original glory, if that's what you want to do. And Janet planted the seed in her daughter's head, and it became Jackie's mission, you know, and her imperative to restore the White House. And she spent years doing it and did an amazing job at it. And it's interesting to me, you know, that all this sort of stemmed from her not wanting to live there and to turning it into a place that she would, that she ultimately was proud to live in, you know. And I love the fact that it was her mom who sort of, who inspired her to want to do that. That's never been known before, you know, and that's just part of what this book is about. It's just, this book is really about showing the influence of her own side of the family on her life. Certainly, the Kennedys never really probably understood that the reason Jackie did this was because it was her mom's idea, right? So interesting.
Right. And you know, it's so interesting how her mother is, even in your book and certainly in other books, does not always come off as a particularly sympathetic figure, because there are a lot of ways in which she was a very tough mother to Jackie, not always sympathetic or sensitive. But I have to say, I came away kind of admiring the way she responded to Jackie's complaints about what the White House looked like. And she's quoted in your book as basically saying, stop it. This is beneath you. You must stop with all this hand-wringing. You can't fall apart every time something doesn't go your way. And that sort of tough love that Jackie received from her mother, that certainly played a huge part in how she was ultimately able to contend with this and, of course, much steeper challenges which were yet to come.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, look, that's, you know, what can I say about Janet Auchincloss? You know, her son Jamie is a good friend of mine now after years and years of helping me with, you know, with this book. And Jack Warnicki's daughter, Margot, just gave me the other day a book that she found in her father's library that she thought I would love to have. And she sent it to me, and it's inscribed to Jack Warnicki from Janet Auchincloss. And it's in her, and it's a very long inscription in Janet's handwriting, and it talks about, you know, Jamie's christening, and it talks about Jackie's debutante party, and it gives Jack Warnicki this long history of Newport in this inscription. And my gosh, I value it so much that his daughter sent this to me, you know, that I'm able to have this piece of Janet Auchincloss with me on my book tour, because, you know, prior to my writings about Janet, not a lot of was known about her. You know, I did a book, Jackie, Janet, and Lee, 5 years ago, which was really the public's introduction to Janet Auchincloss. And prior to that, no one ever really knew anything about Janet Auchincloss. And she's an amazing woman. She's really formidable. Look, she's got her faults, you know, but one thing that she always had was her daughter's back. You know, she really was her daughter's biggest fan. And, you know, she didn't always agree with Jackie, but she made sure that Jackie understood exactly how they felt. And, man, toward the end, Jackie was Janet's chief and primary caretaker for 10 years when Janet suffered from Alzheimer's. And that's something the public never knew about, that Jackie was flying from New York, where she was an editor at Doubleday, up to Newport so that she could care for her mother on weekends when her mother was suffering from Alzheimer's, and did that for like 10 years. You know, so they had a very, very unusual and also very close relationship.
Hmm. Your book, of course, spans well beyond those White House years, including very intriguing information about her relationship with Aristotle Onassis, his marriage to him, what prompted her to do such a thing, the nature of their marriage, and, of course, her life after the death of Aristotle Onassis, including that fascinating career as an editor, and then ultimately those sad final years when she is contending with cancer. Of all the things I could draw upon, I find myself circling back to November of 1963, because this, of course, will mark the 60th anniversary of JFK's assassination. And I think also in your book, despite the fact that those events and their immediate aftermath have been endlessly written about, you are able to write about this from her perspective and give us a deeply personal sense of what she experienced. And I should think, when it came to writing about this particular chapter in Jackie Kennedy's life, that you had to feel a especially heavy weight of responsibility.
I did feel a weight of responsibility, because it's so important, and it's one of the things that people did not understand, and maybe don't until they read this book. You know, because the image that Jackie put forth was of strength and resiliency, and in many ways that was true of her. But the secret part of Jackie suffered from PTSD over what happened in Dallas in 1963 for her entire life. And, you know, she told John Warnicki that even when she was having a good time, she felt that there was some kind of a betrayal of JFK just in her having a light moment, you know, that I guess it was a part of it had to do with, you know, survivor's guilt. As well as PTSD. She was in therapy throughout the 1970s to try to deal with this. And at the time that she turned 60 years old, John Warnicki asked her, you know, do you have any regrets? And she said that, you know, her one regret was that she let this moment in 1963 poison her entire life. And she wished that she had been able to find a way to reconcile it. But I think it really says something about her survival instinct that she also told John that she felt that if she just had 10 more years, she'd be able to get this under control. And imagine that, you know, she dealt with it for 30 years, and she felt that if she just had 10 more years, she'd be able to deal with it better. You know, she never stopped trying to live her life. But, you know, when your husband is murdered right beside you in such a public way. And she was only 31, 32 years old at the time. You know, how do you go on? I mean, how do you just put that aside and go on with your life? I think that she never really was able to.
Right. I think one of the most tender moments in the entire book is when you tell us about how her beloved stepfather, Hugh Auchincloss, took her into an embrace at one point. I think this is maybe on that Monday after the funeral is all done, and whispered to Jackie, "You were braver than I ever knew a person could be." It's just...
Wow. I mean, you know, wow. You know, Jamie, his son, Hugh's son Jamie, told me that story. And what a wonderful man, you know. And again, an unsung hero in Jackie's life. I mean, no one ever heard of Hugh Auchincloss before. And this guy is, he comes to life in this book in such a great way because his son, you know, his son Jamie, you know, helped bring him to life for me. And Hugh was such a big presence in Jackie's life. As I said earlier, he gave her away at both her weddings. He loved her so much. He raised her from the age of 13 when her mom married Hugh and Jackie moved into Hammersmith Farm, Hugh's estate. And he's a wonderful, he was a one. I say he, I kind of find, it's funny because I refer to him in the present tense. He's been gone for 30 years, you know. But
wow.
In my mind, he lives because he's been part of my consciousness, you know, for so many years. I feel like he's kind of with me in some way. And he was a wise man who loved Jackie so much and somebody that the public never knew anything about. And I'm so happy that with this book, people get to know him. And I love the fact that you brought that up because that moment, when I wrote that moment, I remember that very specific moment when that moment was written. And it meant a lot to me.
Mm. His son, Jamie, who you say is now a friend of yours, so this would be a half-brother of Jackie, you tell us he is the only surviving member of that dramatic walking processional, funeral processional. And of course, that is one sad truth, is although you tell us many of the intimates in Jackie's life feel much freer to talk about her now, 30 years after her death, the fact is that most of those intimates are no longer with us. But you, in this book, have drawn upon a wealth of research and study over the last 30 years, and many of those intimates, in a sense, can still be with us in this book.
Thank you for saying that. And that's why I feel that Hugh Auchincloss is in the present, you know, because he lives so strongly in that book, as does Jamie and everybody else who, you know, who contributed in so many different ways. You know, I interviewed Yusha Auchincloss, which was, Jamie's, I guess that would be his stepbrother, because that was one of Hugh's original children. And, you know, there are just so many Auchinclosses in this book, and I think people are going to really enjoy knowing about that side of Jackie's family.
And it's important when somebody is as amazing as Jackie Kennedy Onassis, we often kind of think of them in this splendid isolation. Your book helps us understand not only who she was, but why she was who she was, and that had a lot to do with the important people in her life. The book again is Jackie, Public, Private, Secret, published by St. Martin's Press, the author, J. Randy Tarabarelli. Thank you so much for giving us this wonderful book, and thank you for the privilege of once again speaking with me on the morning show. Congratulations on all of this success.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this great interview. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
And to finish out today's morning show, I thought it would be interesting to replay for you a portion of my 2018 conversation with J. Randy Tarabarelli, talking about his book, Jackie, Janet, and Lee, The Secret Lives of Janet Auchincloss and Her Daughters, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and Lee Rodswell. I think one of the things that is quite intriguing about this particular family is that they are a wealthy family, but not, in a sense, sort of an obscenely wealthy family. And it is a family that is complicated in some intriguing ways, and yet not a family racked with terrible controversies or terrible shame. Although there are certain things about this family that are certainly a source of some embarrassment. But I just find it in a strange sort of way. It's a very unique family, and yet they feel a little bit ordinary in the sense that I guess. Maybe in a way they are not the Kennedys in that respect. Do you think that's a fair characterization?
I do. I think that's a greatly fair characterization, and that's one of the reasons why I loved writing about this family. It's because they're so relatable, you know, that their problems were interpersonal more than they were dramatic on the historical stage. Unlike the Kennedys, where you have these big moments, the Cuban Missile Crisis, you know, the assassination of JFK, the assassination of Bobby, Chappaquiddick, I mean, major, you know, major moments that are historically relevant. This family, Jackie's side of the family, had personal interactions that were explosive, that no one knew about, but just the same are interesting, and I love telling those kinds of stories that people can truly relate to, you know, because I think at the end of the day, you know, when people like Jackie and her sister Lee and her mom Janet go to bed and they're with their own thoughts and their eyes are closed, you know, they were thinking very much the same kinds of things that we all are thinking about our siblings or our parents.
Right.
And that's to me, that kind of universal theme. Look, I've done the other, believe me, and I've enjoyed it, you know, and I'm actually working on another Kennedy book right now called The Kennedys, The Next Generation, and we saw one of those Kennedys recently, you know, with in the Democratic response to Donald Trump's State of the Union, and that's Joe Kennedy III.
The National Weather Service in Milwaukee-Sullivan has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for eastern Walworth County in southeastern Wisconsin, Racine County in southeastern Wisconsin, Kenosha County in southeastern Wisconsin, until 9:30 a.m. At 8:41 a.m., severe thunderstorms were located along a line extending from 6 miles north of Elkhorn to near Wonder Lake to near Woodstock to near Marengo, moving east at 50 miles an hour. Hazard, 60 miles an hour wind gusts. Source, radar indicated. Impact, expect damage to roofs, siding, and trees. Locations impacted include Kenosha, Racine, Mount Pleasant, Pleasant Prairie, Antioch, Elkhorn, Lake Geneva, Sturtevant, Union Grove, East Troy, Paddock Lake, Camp Lake, Wind Lake, Winthrop Harbor, Twin Lakes, Spring Grove, Rochester, Raymond, Wheatland, and Yorkville. People attending the Racine County Fair should seek safe shelter immediately. For your protection, move to an interior room on the lowest floor of a building.
Right there.
Absolutely.
I mean,
right.
And moms and sisters.
Right.
It doesn't get better than that in terms of storytelling.
Right. The love and rivalry between sisters, the protectiveness of a mother that sometimes goes too far, and
yeah.
Sometimes the wrenching choices that people find themselves forced to make. Yes, I think a lot of us, even if we're not a Kennedy or an Onassis or a Bouvier or a Radziwill, will recognize aspects of our own lives and our own relationships and what unfolds here. You tell us very early in the book, in the chapter called The Beginning, that Jackie and Lee Bouvier could not have been more different from each other, even from the start. What would be a couple of the most distinctive ways in which, even as youngsters, there was a very distinct difference between these two sisters, for however devoted they were to one another for at least most of their lives?
Well, you know, Jackie is about 4 years older, and she was always, from the start, more outgoing and more charismatic. You know, Jamie, Jackie's half-brother, told me that she always sort of had this, you know, air of success and of distinction about her from a very, very early age. And Lee was just more of an ordinary girl, and I don't say that in a pejorative way. I just say that you know, when you're a kid, usually kids are just kids, but every now and then you end up with a really precocious child who is just very different than all the other children, you know, in the neighborhood. And that was Jackie. You know, Jackie just, she was very adult. She communicated with adults in a different way than a normal child did. And this just sort of left Lee feeling for much of her childhood inferior to her much more sort of elegant and popular sister. And I think it's worth noting also that when the girls were very young, Janet, who did not approve of any competition between them, would often lecture them and tell them, you know, that I don't approve of you competing. I want you to be there for each other, to be completely supportive of each other in everything that you do. You will only have each other in this lifetime. And after she would give that lesson to the two girls, she would take Jackie by the hand and then go off shopping or to lunch or wherever, and she would leave Lee behind. And one of the reasons perhaps is because Jackie was 4 years older and had more in common with her mom. But that said, I think it created in Lee at a very early age the sense of competition between her and her sister that was inadvertently fostered by their own mother, and it stuck with Lee throughout Lee's entire life.
I was really struck by something that is said, again, early in the book, in a chapter called A Sad Kind of Love. This is in the chapter where we hear about Lee actually marrying at the age of 19 in kind of a desperate bid to, first of all, escape the protectiveness of her mother and to just gain some distinct happiness of her own. It's a marriage that does not last very long. But in this chapter, you quote someone named Chauncey Parker III, who was the son of, I don't remember now, but somebody connected to the family. Maybe the son of Hugh Auchincloss, the son of one of his business partners, I think. But
yes, exactly. Yes.
Right. So, and he knew Lee from a very young age and said of her, she had a douceur about her. Douceur is a French word that implies more than gentleness, something stronger than just sweetness. She had a sense of wonderment, a lilt in her voice, and a wonderful smile. She was someone you really just wanted to take in your arms and hug. She had a delicious aura. And again, this is talking about not Jackie, but Lee. But it's as though Lee herself did not understand this about herself and did not appreciate her own special beauty distinct from Jackie's.
Wow. Thank you for that analysis, because that is so on the nose. I mean, that is exactly it. You know, I fell in love with Lee in this book. I knew nothing about Lee prior to this book. I mean, I'd met her and you know, talked to her, but I just really knew nothing about her. And she really is, in so many ways, really the most fascinating of the three women, and that she, you know, she had everything that Jackie had, and in many cases a little bit more, but yet Jackie had the charmed life, and Lee had to work her entire life for everything that she ever was able to attain. Nothing was ever handed to Lee Radziwill. And she was much more idealistic and romantic in the way that she looked at life. And I think that her first marriage to Michael Canfield really tells a good story. Michael Canfield didn't have any money, and he, some people even thought he was gay, and there was a lot of confusion about that in the family. But Lee, just her heart went out to him, and they sort of had this same kind of whimsical, you know, pathos about them, and that was what brought them together. And I think that relationship said a lot about Lee, you know, whereas Janet had lectured the girls early on, do you really want to know what the secret of happily ever after is? And they said, yes, mommy, what is it? And she said, money and power. And Jackie, according to Janet, got that right away. But Lee thought that was appalling. You know, and Janet said, you know, poor Lee was so shocked by that. But she, this is a lesson that Janet felt Lee needed to learn. And it wasn't until Lee was in her mid-60s, as you'll find reading the book, it wasn't until Lee was in her mid-60s that she actually married somebody with money. Prior to that, she was going for something else in her relationships, and it wasn't about money and power.
Hmm. We're speaking with J. Randy Tarabarelli. His book is Jackie, Janet, and Lee, The Secret Lives of Janet Auchincloss and Her Daughters, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and Lee Radziwill. We should mention that one of the most distinctive figures in this book is Aristotle Onassis. And, of course, one of the most intriguing things, as if he wasn't intriguing enough on his own, is the fact that he has romantic dalliances with both Jackie and Lee. First with Lee, eventually with Jackie, and, of course, eventually Aristotle Onassis and Jacqueline Kennedy are married. And one of the things that I found quite remarkable in your book is the portrait you paint of this man, who often is talked about now in the most unflattering of terms, or with only attention given to the things that made him, you know, maybe a fairly grotesque and repulsive sort of figure, kind of a symbol of arrogance and obscene extravagance. But there were other things about him, even apart from being so incredibly wealthy, that made him actually quite charismatic and obviously a figure of at least some sort of allure to both Lee and Jackie. Can you say a word about that?
Well, thank you for pointing that out, because I think it's really very easy when you're writing about these sort of historical people to make them cartoon characters. And I think that that has been the case with Onassis. People have approached him as if he wasn't even a human being. And he actually was a very fascinating person, you know, who made Lee feel like she was special. You know, Lee had up until that point, always felt that she paled in comparison to Jackie. And Onassis said, no, that is not the case. You know, if anything, you're far more interesting than Jackie. You're different. You have a lot to offer. You know, and he, I find him fascinating. This is the third time I've written about him, and so I know a lot of Onassis's family members, and a lot of people have, you know, expressed to me stories about Onassis that show me that he was a much more in-depth and complicated person. Now, this isn't to say that he didn't have his mercenary side. Of course he did. And this isn't to say that he was a prince of princes, you know, because he really wasn't. He was a flawed person. But he was not a bad person. And I hope that when people read this book, they'll understand that, you know, he was not just a simple man to understand, that he was a very complicated but very interesting person.
Right. At one point you write, Onassis had an uncanny understanding of human nature and knew how to appeal to people no matter their stations. He could engage in a lively and entertaining conversation with anyone and make that person feel as if he or she was the most important person in his life. That's an important gift, of course, for people to have. I appreciate the fact that you reveal as much as you do about the trauma and heartbreak that Jacqueline Kennedy experienced in the wake of her husband's assassination. And we leave it to our listeners to explore that in your book, but I think you do a remarkable job of telling that still largely untold story with such discernment and also sensitivity, for as much as you do reveal. And we also certainly come to understand how the assassination of Bobby drove Jacqueline Kennedy to a very special kind of level of fear. And it made that marriage to Aristotle Onassis, in a sense, a compelling necessity. And it also put Jacqueline and Lee at odds with one another. It's a fascinating story. If you don't mind, I really want to leap ahead because I think one of the other really intriguing stories I don't think ever really thoroughly told before is the final years of Janet and especially of Jackie's desperate attempts to keep her mother safe in her own home with a very overpowering fear that she was being mistreated by the man she was living with. Can you just sketch the situation for us? I think a lot of people will appreciate this difficult scenario.
Well, this is a story that has never been told before, and to be able to tell a story about Jackie that people don't know is, you know, it's quite astonishing these days, you know, because so much has been reported and we think we know it all, but this is a story that even I didn't know until I researched this book. Janet Auchincloss, Jackie's mom, married a man named Bingham Morris when Janet was in her 70s, and she was on the at the onset of Alzheimer's when she married him, and Alzheimer's began to take over her life during her marriage to this man, her third husband, and she told Jackie during the course of this that this man was abusing her, possibly sexually, possibly physically. Jackie couldn't be sure because of the fact that Janet kept changing her story because of her illness. And as you can imagine, this was very difficult for Jackie and also for Lee to not be able to get to the bottom of it because the Alzheimer's disease was sort of standing in the way of clarity. And Jackie fought very vigorously to get this man out of the house. And she managed to evict him a couple of times, and then he would keep coming back. And Janet kept fighting Jackie every time Bingham was gone because she wanted him there, and then when he was there, she wanted him gone. And this went on for a couple of years in Jackie's life while she was an editor at Doubleday, which is a period of time that I first knew Jackie and first met her. And it's interesting that she was able to sort of compartmentalize all of this, and no one knew this was going on in her life. I certainly didn't. And it was very difficult, and I think anybody can relate to who has had an elderly parent can relate to this sort of horror of wanting to protect this person from somebody and not really being able to do so. And that was what Jackie faced in Janet's latter years.
Right. It's one of those cases where even when you are Jackie Kennedy Onassis, one of the most famous women in the world, that doesn't mean there aren't those sorts of issues and challenges that are beyond your own power to wipe away. it really makes her human in a way that that isn't always the case when we read about or see someone so incredibly famous and distinctive. I appreciate that and much more about this fascinating book, again called Jackie, Janet, and Lee, The Secret Lives of Janet Auchincloss and Her Daughters, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and Lee Rodswell, published by St. Martin's Press. J. Randy Tarabarelli, thank you so much for writing this fascinating book and for joining me today on The Morning Show to talk about it. What a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's nice to talk to you again, and I'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
And again, J. Randy Tarabarelli's newest book, which we talked about in part one of today's morning show, is Jackie, Public Private Secret. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, an economist, Richard Vague, talks about his intriguing book, The Paradox of Debt, which talks about how debt is, in some respects, all but a necessity, particularly on the governmental level, but that too much debt shifts from a constructive to a destructive effect. We'll talk about that tomorrow on The Morning Show. On Friday, I speak with Ryan Kane, athletic director at Carthage College, about the controversy of hazing in athletic programs. That, of course, has been in the headlines as of late because of news out of Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois. We'll talk with Ryan Kane, get his perspective on the phenomenon of hazing. Also, Tim Brown, the author of a wonderful book called The Tao of the Backup Catcher. It looks at the intriguing role that many backup catchers play on Major League Baseball teams. And we'll focus in particular on a certain backup catcher who